And once again, it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News with John and Emily. Of course, we join together every week, take a look at just some of the stories that you'll find in either the Lakeville Journal or the Millerton News. And of course, at tricornernews.com, where if you subscribe there and get the paper digitally, you can go to either paper there as well. Emily and John, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Marshall.
So here we are. We had our first big snowstorm of the winter, just almost at St. Patrick's Day. We survived that. I guess we go on. We take a look at the papers. Let's start off first with you, John. We'll start off with something that takes a long time to get done. We finally vote on it in May, but that is the Region 1 budget.
Yes, this is the Region 1 school budget for 2023 and 24, and it's an $8.6 million budget that is an increase really of about 2.2%. There will be a public hearing in early April, April 6th, and then, as you pointed out, in May, on May 2nd, there will be a referendum. There really were a number of components that hit the budget and caused these increases. It always comes down to who pays. And in this year, three towns are going to have an increase. Cornwall, which doesn't always have a big increase, but this year has a whopper of $396,000 increase. North Canaan got hit last year heavy, but they do have an increase again this year of almost $200,000. And Salisbury also has a pretty good size increase. So it's there's about a 4% raise for contractual obligations for the teachers and some insurance grants coming and going. But it's just the bill for educating our students.
Yeah, and it's something that you have to do. And what always gets me upset, John, is that no matter how much coverage, and there's a lot of written coverage that's done in the Lakeville Journal, no matter that we videotape and put all these budget meetings up for people to see on CATV6, and they actually have the budget hearings where people can go to, by the time May comes, you get a lot of people that say, Well, we don't know. I don't know how much more we can all do to get people to show up at these meetings. So it's not sticker shock when the time comes to vote.
Right. Yeah.
I just don't understand. I mean, we'll see what happens. I was speaking with Sam Herrick just the other day, not only about the budget but also about the lack of school bus drivers, but we'll save that for something else. Now, I see this year, thanks to the Lakeville Journal, that Arts Day for fourth graders was held in Kent this year.
Yes, this is the 27th annual fourth grade Arts Day. And boy, if you just segue from talking about educational budgets right into this story, you can see where your money goes. This is an event that was held before at Hotchkiss, and this year is at Kent, was done at Kent Center School. It's a bunch of workshops, some performances, and visual education, narrative photography, even needle felting. The students were guided by people from the community who were expert in these fields. They did hip hop dancing, lessons, songs and dance from Mexico theater. There was also somewhat of a little bit of a preview of the Mean Streets show that's HVHRS is going to have this coming weekend. But it was the first time the fourth grade Arts Day was held at Kent School. And I believe it's a funny little anecdote, but Patrick Sullivan, our intrepid reporter, remembers that it was the last story he covered before the pandemic. In other words, we covered fourth grade Arts Day. The last time he used his camera that he just got was covering that event. up at Hotchkiss.
Yeah, for all those years it was at Hotchkiss, and is it going to stay in Kent now? Do we know?
We don't know.
Well, like I said, it's always great to see that story. I participated actually in a couple of those Arts Day, and the amazing experiences and the introduction to all phases of arts to those fourth graders, I really think does amazing things to them. So when they go on further from elementary school to the high school and then on to college, it really makes a difference in their lives, the fourth graders.
That's right. And fourth graders, I know from my own experience being a parent, learning that fourth grade is a very important grade. This year, we have some really sweet photos from our Riley Klein of some fourth graders making painting Ukrainian eggs. But it is at a key time when the texts that you study get longer. There's more expected from you. You're beginning to grow up in fourth grade.
Yep. Now tell me if I'm reading this next story wrong. I haven't seen it yet, but the Connecticut Mirror story that's in the Lakeville Journal about the legislature possibly ending legal ads in newspapers. See, I would think that would be a big mistake. I'll take your take on it, but tell me more about that story.
Well, this story is looking at a bill that's in the legislature that actually got some kind of tangential support from an appellate court decision. Basically, it's saying that given all the changes in the newspaper world with the loss of newspapers and the need to inform the public of things that are changing on a government level, that it might be okay to let towns use their own websites to advertise legal notices. So, for example, a planning and zoning hearing. And there was a case that went through the courts where a small town down in southeast Connecticut had something in its legal notices that ran in the Middletown Press, and there really were no subscribers to the Middletown Press in this town, and called Fenwick, and so it became a matter of concern. And now the big issue, as you sort of point out, is the people who are opposed to this idea of letting towns use their websites is that you don't have your notice published in essentially an assuredly credible and independent body. So you're relying on the towns to not keep you informed by themselves without relying on a long-standing existing authoritative product like the Lakeville Journal.
Well, I just think that by making these legal notices mandatory, I think it helps the papers, and I think it's just another way you take away another chance for a public that's already too heavily dependent on news from social media. I think it would be a big mistake. I think that newspapers need that support and need the fact that people can go to them once again for this. The more reasons you take people away from going to a newspaper, the more reasons they're not going to go there at all.
Right. Well, also, I mean, the newspaper, its business is to publish information, and we do that with a lot of reliability. And we have definitely had experiences here in the Northwest Corner where towns just have a little mistake, and they couldn't get their thing announced on their website in time, and so public notice wasn't right there, so they couldn't proceed with the hearing, or they couldn't proceed with whatever it was. And you can just imagine how this could become problematic. We'll see where the bill goes.
All right. Well, I think I'll write a letter to Maria Warren and say this is just a bad idea overall. In my opinion, I'm not making an opinion for you guys, just my own opinion. I just think that once again, it's stripping away something that newspapers need to do, and more. All right, we will step away from that. And once again, North Canaan, concerned about the Housatonic Railroad spraying. Every year this comes up, and I just don't know why. People want railroads to go eventually to Pittsfield, and if they do, they're going to have to come up through the Northwest Corridor. And you would think that the railroads would try to bend over backwards to make people happy, instead of every year going through the same thing. It's just every year it seems like the spraying that they do is just it agitates people when it's not done properly.
Right. This story is a continuation of the concern this year. North Canaan selectmen have also joined in with Cornwall, Falls Village, Kent, and Salisbury, who are all of whom are trying to get an answer from the railroad on what kind of herbicide is it using along the track? What is the impact on the surrounding environment? Is it in any way following or adhering to the kinds of restrictions and requirements that are in play in Massachusetts? Unfortunately, the railroad is very hard to get a hold of. We've made repeated attempts to reach them. We've gone to their site twice, the yard in North Canaan, and it has just been unsuccessful. Short of waiting at the crossing for a train to go through, I don't know how we're going to reach them. But we Maria Horn and Steve Harding are both on this case too. Harding said that he really plans to look into legislation that might mandate spraying practices of some kinds of spraying practices. So we'll see where this goes. But it reminded me a little bit of the all the towns in both Dutchess County and Litchfield County who signed up. Not liking what was happening at Charon Hospital. This is sort of now the Housatonic Railroad's turn.
All right, and we take a look now. We'll stay in North Canaan. Once again, the principal is leaving, Alicia Roy, and there's a brand new principal coming in. And once again, I think what Region 1 is doing is they're bringing in somebody from within the region, which I think is such a big bonus.
Right. Alicia Roy, who has been the North Canaan principal, is going to step down roughly a year from now, but they are planning the transition to be as smooth as possible. So Beth Johnson, who is, as you pointed out, is the daughter of someone who went to North Canaan Elementary and has her own children there. And so she is going to sort of transition alongside as assistant principal alongside Alicia Roy. And Alicia Roy gets a lot of kudos for navigating through the pandemic and implementing changes that really are helpful both to the staff and to the professional learning groups there. She had something called morning meeting, closing circle. So she will definitely be missed, but it is one of the biggest schools and it is definitely a story to take a look at. It's a nice photo of both of them in the paper.
Yeah, what I was saying, I had muted my mic, is that I think it's two times in a row now that the region has gone, this time North Canaan Elementary School and the Region 1 have gone within their ranks to bring somebody who's got a lot of experience. And I just think it's so much better to do that if possible than to form a search committee and look far, far away when we have so many talented people that are been in the region for a long time.
I agree.
All right, what's for the next few stories? Let's go over to Millerton, New York, and the Millerton News. Emily, nice to talk to you again this week. We take a look at the first story that we'll talk about, and once again, mental health conference, which is held in Reddock for school mental health.
Yeah, so our reporter Deborah Meyer went to a workshop at the Red Hook High School. It was organized by the Northern Dutchess Mental Health Collaborative and included representatives from school districts in Pine Plains and Red Hook and Rhinebeck, and it involves strategies to strengthen students' mental health.
It's funny. We over here in Connecticut have a lot of different things that help out mental health wise in the schools, whether it's the Housatonic Youth Bureau, whether it's formerly SAGE, formerly Women's Support Services. It's such a prime time to deal with mental health with the students at that age. We're going to move on to Pine Plains, where a lot of things have been happening in that little small town with the incredible entertainment center they have there. But you've got a story here about the Stissing House is doing its own little surging in Pine Plains.
Right. So our reporter Elias Sorich went and had a conversation with Claire DeBoer, and she's owned the Stissing House for about a year. And he talked to her about what it's like to own the restaurant and what it's like to be in the area and what she's looking forward to.
And she also, I'll jump in here to say that she's also, a semifinalist for the Best New Restaurant 2023 by the James Beard Foundation. That was announced late January, but it will be finalized at the end of this month. The most prestigious honor, the nominees will be announced on the 29th.
March 29th,
so,
right.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting.
All right. Well, Pine Plains has its own little gem out there as you head over towards the Hudson Valley. From the Stissing House, let's move on to we have a great FFA program here at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. I was so honored by giving a certificate over in Pine Plains years ago by the FFA, became an honorary member. They held their farm and toy and auction, which is coming up on Saturday. When Dave Teeter and I for many years broadcast live from that event, and that is a very well attended event.
Yeah, so this will be the 29th annual. They haven't had one since 2019, actually, because of COVID. So this will take place at the Stissing Mountain High School on Saturday. As you mentioned, there will also be a collectibles auction and a children's pedal tractor pull. Should be a lot of fun.
We were speaking about the Millerton News, some of the stories. So when we talk about the Millerton News and the Lakeville Journal, you're just getting a snapshot of some of the stories in the papers, and at tricornernews.com, you'll find full stories and many, many, many more stories. Let's go to Millbrook now. You have to explain this headline to me. Cheerleaders make a comeback.
So the cheerleading team at Millbrook High School has been on hiatus due to the pandemic, and they are back in action. So we have a little article about that. And we also have something. The girls basketball team took the Class C regional championship, and they're going to be playing for the Southeast Regional Class C finals this weekend.
You know,
Millbrook
Emily,
sports update.
Yeah, I'm so old that back in when I went to high school at Housatonic, cheerleading was actually a sport that cheerleaders did. But Housatonic was one of the first schools in the state and Northeast, as a matter of fact, that actually started a women's sports programming. But yeah, you could get a varsity letter by being a cheerleader back when in the days when I used to ride a wagon to school.
It is a sport. There's a lot of athleticism involved in that.
There really is. It's almost like jumping and tumbling. It really is. We'll stay in Millbrook again. Once again, you mentioned about the basketball team winning the championship. I've been following that in the paper. And once again, that is a terrific story as well.
Now, Marshall, I got to just jump in and say that the other really cool thing here is that two of those students are members of the 1,000-point club. One of the girls, a senior, Emily Grassler, and another one is Megan Fox's junior, both have scored, hit the 1,000-point level, which is pretty darn exciting.
That's a mark that is recognized in every school and basketball league, no matter whether it's high school or the professional. Well, John, we've come to the point where we'll get back to Compass in just a moment, but it's a time where we take a look at the editorial, the letters to the editor, and the viewpoints.
Yes, we have an editorial this week, really commending the efforts of the community leaders in the health sector to come up really with a community health needs assessment. It's a triennial review. In this case, Nuvance Health and Sharon Hospital were the keystone players, but it included representatives of communities in both Connecticut and New York, hospital board leadership, administrative leadership, local health departments, and anybody else who's really a big hospital stakeholder. And this was a 3-month study that concluded, and we wrote a story about it, you know, on the front page last week. Deborah Alexinis did and came up with a sort of story about the conclusions. And what's going to happen next is that the idea is that this needs assessment really needs to be matched up with the community in an implementation way. So you've decided what the community wants, and let's make sure we deliver it. So they're going to be coming up with task forces that include food pantries, churches, people from the medical community, nonprofit agencies. So this will be an ongoing process to kind of match this assessment, which is a CDC mandate, with the community, and comes to the conclusion that we're grateful that we're looking out for our own health.
So let's take a look at some of your on the Viewpoint pages before we get to the letters. Once again, some of your contributors on the Viewpoint page.
Yes, we have the occasional observer, Matt Gordon from Lakeville, who really is taking a look at our birds and how our birds need to be protected from ourselves. And that includes things like putting a bell on the cat and finding ways to prevent the window strikes from happening. But he takes a long look at the history of how we've tried to take care of our birds. We have Bill Schmick writing on the debt ceiling, which is looming and coming around. We have a fantastic Peter Steiner cartoon, which they're always fantastic, but please take a look at that one. We also have in Millerton a look at Spring Coming by Larry Conklin, who's a Vietnam vet and member of the Millerton American Legion, and a piece by somebody from Todd Crantetti, who's in the Office of Aging, Dutchess County, really looking at a new telemarketing law that is attempting to prevent phone scanners. Apparently, the new law requires or allows for you to identify something as a scam right away, not at the end of the call. So once you figured out this is a scam, you can immediately take action.
All right. And let's not forget Compass. Springtime is coming, and Compass has been very busy, actually, all year long this year, especially since we got a little bit over COVID. But we're going into a very, very, very busy time with Compass.
Yes, Compass is has an abundance of really beautiful paintings, watercolors on the cover this week. The Kent Art Association in Kent is having an exhibit. It's March Women's Invitational Show, featuring large portfolios from 6 women artists in the area. Many of them are realistic watercolor botanicals. That's a mouthful, but that's what they are, and they're really beautiful. This show is open on view through April 2nd. We have another piece, this one by Lila Hawken, which looks at the Sharon Historical Society's gallery show, which is holding 28 works of students, the adult student exhibition of what is called the North Light Art Class. And that is, you know, that is going to be up and going through May 5th. We also have a very interesting piece by Riley Klein, which I don't think I could accomplish what he did, but he somehow managed to write a story explaining how poetry, words, and art come together. And that's clearly the work of someone, a very sophisticated person, Kylie Gilotti, who has written about the ambient grief that we all felt during the pandemic. And this is an exhibit that's up through April 30th. We have some calendar items, including, not to be missed, as I mentioned before, the Mean Girls play. That's the Housatonic Musical Theater Society show starting this weekend. And it will just be this weekend at Housie.
All right. Well, this week in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News, of course, the papers are up and out for pickup around our tri-state region. You can also go to tricornernews.com. And, of course, you can hear Emily and John here on Robin Hood Radio as well. Guys, we'll see what happens in the next week, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you very much. We're still digging out.
Yeah.